It's Dr. Tennant's Verbal Highs. Let's start the show with Lewis Tennant. Here we go. The guests and interviews that you're looking for, with creators, innovators, and so much more. For all episodes and further info, verbalhighs.com is the place to go.
Like a carry-on film. Welcome to Dr. Tennant's Verbal Highs, the podcast podcasted weekly from a kitchen bench in Kingston, Auckland, New Zealand. I'm on the creaky chair today because it's my third chair, it's my spare chair, and I had two guests in, so they had to have the two non-creaky chairs. That's how it goes. Ryan Cooper and Alex Layton from Muck Party Productions came in, and oh man, it was every episode has been fantastic for a myriad of reasons, but I really feel like the podcast came into its own today. You know, Alex approached me, first person that's approached me to do a show, and turned on up with this thing that I didn't actually view or take in the media he spoke of, that he's behind, until about an hour and a half before the podcast, and it's just stunning. It's, you know, everything that I hope with the podcast would encompass in terms of creators and innovators, himself and Ryan turned up, and it's a delicious episode. It's really cool. Yeah, I had half a kilo of Cheerios for breakfast. It wasn't ideal. I feel quite sick now, and they were cheese loaded. It was like, I had a half a kilo of sausages this morning. You know, that's not good. It's not good. These guys are, hackneyed phrase, living the dream. They are living the dream. They started off dreaming about collectively in 1998 at animation school. They do a show called Barefoot Bandits, which is the focus of today's episode, and which I'm going to disappear to after getting this episode up and binge watch with glee. It occurred to me while I was watching it that I didn't actually check whether what Alex was doing was shit before or after I agreed to do the podcast. I just assumed, and assumption's great sometimes, eh? They say it's the mother of all fuck-ups, but in this example, these guys have just... I feel really inspired after this episode. I just... Small tech companies in New Zealand. There's a guy called Paul Callaghan. Sir Paul Callaghan, one of our great thinkers who passed away recently, rest in peace, has a great speech that's available on YouTube called Mapping Our Future. And it all looks very spreadsheety and kind of dry balls if you look at the initial frame when you search that topic. But he's a compelling speaker, but he chats about in relation to Muck Party, which is the company name that these guys, or creative name these guys, make their cartoons under. Callaghan talks about how we need small innovative tech companies to be more seriously considered in terms of New Zealand. The title again, Mapping Our Future, so it's in that. And, you know, I initially thought about Serato when I watched it. Like, Callaghan would have had no idea about Serato, I assume. But these guys encompass that as well. We lose some of our greatest, or a lot of our greatest, often daily, weekly, yearly, with people flying overseas to do things like animation, which is what these guys do, cartoons. You know, they've stayed here. They've stuck together as a crew. I really got under the hood. I really wanted to get under the hood in terms of how what they do works behind the scenes, and I hope you know, enjoy hearing about that as I did. You know, as a podcast, it was fun. They were a couple of mushrooms. You know, they were fun guys to be with. Then they left, and I thought, well, I could bloomin' hang out with those guys a bit more. I bloomin' could. There's a wee noise at one point in the podcast. I'm not sure what that was. It was kind of a... And I'm unsure what caused that. But when that happens, please don't stop. I was going to say tune out. That's so tune out. Tune out. That's so analog. But don't tune out, because it comes and it goes, you know, like the ebbs and flows of life. With that, I'm constantly amazed at the number of podcasts I listen to with freaking fantastic guests where the producer week in, week out can't sort out a good, you know, nice, robust sonic feed in terms of good mics and so on. And there's a lot of music-based podcasts doing that. I don't understand that. How can you do a podcast on music and have your podcast sound like shit? You know, surely, by the nature of what you're critiquing and discussing, you could sort them things out. You could sort them things out. Anyway, these guys really captured the spirit of the podcast. Big up, Muck Putty Productions, Ryan Cooper and Alex, 0.666666666, recurring of the Muck Putty main crew. Their show, if you missed it before, is called Barefoot Bandits. It's on TVNZ on demand. It's killer. And I wouldn't say that if it wasn't. I would have politely gone, that was okay, guys. Yeah. Hey, great chatting. Good stuff. Hey, by the way, bucket list. On my bucket list, Ryan and Alex, is to be a voice on a cartoon. All right.
This is Dr. Tannen's Verbal Highs.
With me, I have, and I wasn't going to use this word, but you guys used it because I thought it might not be the correct technical or artistic term. But you referred to yourself as cartoon makers, which I really like.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got Ryan and Alex with me, part of Muck Putty Productions, and their current, really, I guess, well, probably the most major project so far is Barefoot Bandits, which I just watched and is freaking amazing. And I want to talk about how you guys kind of talking about how you had to pitch it to kids and so on at some stage during the podcast, because I literally laughed out loud more than once, and it wasn't, you know, kitty humor. No.
Yeah, for sure. No, we make it for us.
Yeah.
First and foremost.
Yeah.
That's always kind of been. We try to appeal to our inner child and hope that that still is relevant to modern day children.
with that modern day, I thought about that, like, so for people who haven't seen this, it's going to be, I guess that's the whole thing with podcast writers. You go and check stuff out if you haven't. So
absolutely.
Yeah, give us, yeah. We'll paint a little bit of a picture as we go. But we've got these three characters, you know, classic, you know, they've all got their own traits and so on. Sort of classic team of childhood investigators or whatever. But yeah, they worship this TV character. And I thought about that, is that kind of a throwbacky thing for you? Like, do you reckon kids still do that?
It's a mixture of things.
Yeah, so the whole show is almost entirely, I guess, the core of it, the heart of it, is a homage to stuff we grew up on. We pitched it as the Kiwi Goonies.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of, when you're pitching, the people you're pitching to generally like to have it compared to something else.
Yeah.
You know, just so they feel safe.
And the Goonies isn't too obscure, eh?
You're kind of dealing with people who kind of know the 80s, so
yeah,
you know,
because it's funny, because I find about you guys, like, the older I get, the more I'm really quite often confused with age, and I lecture, and I remember about 5-6 years ago, I played Thingy's eyeball popping out because I thought that was hilarious and obviously of these students' era.
Yeah,
they all looked at me, and I went home and googled it, and I'm like, fuck, I was about 15 years out with that. Cultural references, like, who's Thingy?
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
with the Barefoot Bandits, we made a conscious effort not to be too pop culture referencey. So we have made cartoons that directly reference, you know, Never Ending Story and Goonies and Labyrinth and stuff like that. But this, we just wanted to make a show that had those tones, but didn't necessarily reference those things. So, yeah, we just gave it the feeling of that stuff rather than kids having to know that stuff.
Well, it's an interesting thing, because I've only watched the first one, as I said. I watched it three times. But Yeah, are there things like tablets and stuff in it? Like, what I'm getting at is it's set in an unknown era.
It's an ambiguous
era.
Sort of time.
We were kind of thinking initially we were going to... it was going to be set maybe in the 80s.
Yeah.
And the show, their favourite show, Tumiki Space, was this 80s sort of, like, big TV show that the kids were into. But the more we've gone on, like, as we were kind of developing the show, it seemed a bit more fun to keep the time a bit of a mystery.
I've spotted that. I really liked
and it
that.
Also strips away anything that alienates kids. You know what I mean? Like, we wanted this cartoon to appeal to kids from all walks of life in New Zealand. It's like, so, you know, you strip it back to the quintessential Kiwi kid, take the shoes off, remove all the gadgets and gizmos, and have them running around outside kind of finding adventure wherever they can go.
And I guess it's like when rappers, you know, yell a name check a year, you know. But with the barefoot thing, I was curious about that as well, because it's obviously it's something that's been a consideration, because that's the title after all. What is there any? Am I reading too much? Am I being too deep about this? Why is it barefoot? How's that designed to appeal?
I don't know.
It just had a B and it went with bandits.
No.
It first appeared. A lot of the characters first appeared in a Christmas special we made in 2012. It was our first sort of time we pitched something on a larger scale to New Zealand On Air. And it was a one-off half-hour Christmas special, and it revolved around Tane, who was sort of the leader of the Barefoot Bandits, and his best friend Fridge.
Let's unwrap these as we go as well. Sorry to cut you off. So Tane, describe him.
Tane, he's kind of the
he's the heart of the show. He's the kid who doesn't see hurdles. Mm. He basically just, you know, nothing's a problem. Keep moving forward. He's all about friends. So and having fun.
And his best mate, Fridge, is kind of the
opposite.
Comedic. He's not really a sidekick, but he's definitely sort of the comedic heart of the show as well, voiced by Josh Thompson.
And just a theatre of the mind. He's a little heavier set.
Yes.
I won't use the offensive word with N, G, and R in it. Ginger. He's a redhead.
Yeah. Red of hair. Yeah.
It's very much, an 80s trope as well. The kind of chubby, comedic, sort of sidekick type character.
But as far as making a cartoon goes, you want the characters to all be distinct and have interesting shapes. And,
be visually
striking.
Like, you know, play off each other. And that's, you know, obviously we're a big, you know, it's a visual medium, you know.
I think I probably made you forget the original point you were making, after I made you unwrap the characters. Can you remember what we were talking about?
We were talking about the Barefoot
Christmas.
Bandits.
So
where did the bandits thing come from?
Yeah, the barefoot. Oh, well done.
The story for Missing Christmas, which was essentially the pilot, was that it was this kid, Tane, on an island, and Santa missed the island every year. Because it's at the bottom of New Zealand. It's a fictional island. We made it up so it could kind of be a microcosm of New Zealand. And basically Santa misses them every year, and it was this year that this kid was like, no, I'm going to do something that gets his attention, and he stops. So then we're like, okay, so you got this kid and you got his best friend, and then we just started making lists of what we would have liked as kids, and like we'd have our little club and our treehouse, and we're like, what's the club? And some of the sketches Alex had done, they didn't have shoes on, just because we were trying to capture that quintessential kind of Kiwiness the whole no shoes
too, you know,
running around with your bare feet.
Anything, you know, anybody sort of telling stories is, you know, there's got to be a genuine aspect to it. There's got to be parts of yourself in there if you want it to resonate, and also just
probably also if you want to keep emotionally involved for that long
no,
time.
No, absolutely.
You know?
So a lot of this,
keep it real.
Absolutely. And a lot of this is our childhood and what, you know, in the 80s running around barefoot, like climbing trees, and, you know, it's, so it kind of...
Because the big thing is we're not 9 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
we have no idea.
All we can do is think back to what we would like and hope that, a again.
Well, that's interesting there, yeah, because I'm really sorry you're going to have to hold that microphone for the next hour.
I'm
we brought a third mic in, folks, so I'm currently talking to a large pop screen with an eye poking out the top of it.
I'm very strong for an animator.
Yeah. the kid thing, I mean, look, there's always business considerations or whatever, or like, not even business, but like, will it work? You know, did you get focus groups of wee people into watching?
No,
it doesn't work like that, really.
Yeah, not in New Zealand. No.
Like, it's very much, you know, we kind of built our business on making, the plan was to just make our own cartoons.
Yeah.
And over the years, we made various short form things for What Now and other existing kids shows. And that kind of was our bread and butter for quite a few years.
I was going to ask about that, yeah.
48-hour film festival, competed a few times in that. And it just mostly just really short stuff, 5 minutes, 6 minutes stuff.
Do you think that, because whether or not you had focus groups or whatever, you know, you talked about this 80s experience, the barefoot thing, you know, essentially my childhood, I was 4 to 14 or whatever was the 80s for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens every generation. It's like, well, you have these articles, oh, the kids of today, blah, they're doing this, they're doing that, blah, blah, blah. You guys are dealing with that audience as well as adults now. Sure. You know, how much of that's bullshit? How much is not? How similar is the childhood experience? How old are they?
My kids are 6 and 9.
Perfect case study.
Exactly.
Okay, so we're going to base every childhood experience globally on the 6 and 9 year old.
They're exactly the same as when I was a kid. They just have some extra gadgets thrown in that I would have loved as a kid too. I don't know. I think we've tried to raise, me and my wife have raised our kids with a good balance.
Yeah.
I'm cool with them playing video games. I love video games.
Well, we're hardly the generation that's going to say video games are terrible.
But, you know, then I also love it when the sun's out let's go outside and run around.
Yeah.
You've just finished making them kind of a fort in the backyard. So,
I built a massive massive climbing tower and stuff with the climbing wall and,
And
no padding at the bottom.
And you're in it more than they are.
Yeah, sitting at the top. Come on! But, yeah.
You know, the classic line for childhood with high-tech 80s gadgets for kids. Do you know? Do you remember what it was? Or what I think it was? Got no batteries. What's that? Oh, it's got no batteries.
Christmas was always
Dad rushing to the gas and mum and dad forgot to get station.
I got this. It was such a cool gift. I had an uncle who just used to get me cool gifts, and I got a remote controlled racing car. You know, hello, but for some weird reason the controller took six AAs and the car took eight AAs.
Dude,
so we're looking at buying 14.
And then it would last what? It would last 15 minutes.
Oh, it would go a bit longer than that. And then I drove it past.
Not mine.
I drove it past to someone, and they stood on it accidentally, and it was.
Oh Jesus! Right. Yeah,
that's still cut to talk about that.
Yeah.
So this humour, it's very New Zealand and not in a hokey kind of a way, but, you know, we're definitely in one place here. Is it being watched overseas? And, like, because I know Brotown has been revoiced, for different markets and stuff.
Yeah, I think so, I'm not 100% sure on that.
That's the beauty of animation in a way, like
it's definitely easier
beyond this initial screening in New Zealand. We can sell it overseas and around the world, and it's relatively easy to redub, and it means kind of more sales that way. And
so that's how you'd have to do it, is redub it. You don't think it would translate?
Well, it's playing in Australia without, just as is,
obviously,
but you know,
translate it
close
Australia.
Enough
it's gone down
well, we have a distributor. That might be my phone ringing in my pocket.
I can hear a weird meep, because this is the first time I've ever worn headphones the whole time. Continue on. Sorry.
That's all right.
It's really weird.
No, that's all right. So, yeah, we sold it to Australia so far, and it seems to have gone down well there. And we have a distributor trying to do the rest of the world now. So, fingers crossed. We have a bunch of American friends who have watched it, who have said the Kiwiness of it is kind of a quirk and a charm to them.
Yeah.
Whereas, because the stories are pretty universal.
Yeah.
You know, we have episodes where the kids meet a mammoth man on an iceberg.
Yeah.
And we have, what else do we have? We have zombie vegetables, and we have,
ghost, an old craggy sea captain ghost.
Voiced by John Rhys-Davies.
Wow.
Yeah, and so there's definitely... we're trying to make a cartoon that there's a reason for it being a cartoon. And there's a lot of stuff being made these days where, I mean, maybe not so much right now, but in the past, sort of in the early 2000s, there were a lot of cartoons that were kids at school. So what the fuck are you making that for? Like, what is the point of this being animated? You could, you know, I mean, even Brotown in a way is like, the only reason that was animated is because those dudes can't play. They could have made that live action.
Why did they do it then?
Because
they went through this whole thing of like, everything has to be relatable for a child.
Yeah.
So they made a list and it was like, school is relatable and this, and it's such bullshit.
Are you also sort of saying what kid wants to watch
what they just came home from?
Yeah.
I'm sure it works in some degree, and that, there were some shows that had school in it.
Depends how you frame it. I always like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
That was
but that's good. That's taking the piss out of school.
Yeah.
But, it's like they decided entertainment for children couldn't be escapism.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I wanted to go home and watch DuckTales.
Yeah.
I didn't want to watch shit set in a school.
You can just tell when something reeks of being made by a committee, or people are too scared to trust a creator, or, you know, and animation, especially out of the States, suffers from that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, there's a few gems, but there's a lot of just mediocre, paint by numbers, made by a committee.
The worst ones, I think, this is my media teacher in me coming out. Are the ones, because it's ethically so murky, the ones designed to sell toys.
Mm.
Yeah,
you know, like my little cousin years ago. Now he wouldn't be now; he's 15. But he was into Beyblades, and I watched the show, and I'm like,
meh.
And then I did a bit of reading about it, and it was product first.
Absolutely.
First designer.
Yeah, that's something that came out of the 80s, actually.
Yeah.
Like
the stuff we love too. Like,
get me wrong. If the cartoon's fucking cool and the toys are cool, great.
Yeah.
But if the stories and shows are kind of a lemon, and
I definitely don't like the idea of creating something purely to have a toy. You know, there's movies that are the same that are like, make this movie so that we can sell these toys. And, but, you know, toys from our show would be amazing.
Totally.
Like, the show came first, and it just, toys would be a nice bonus. But, the 80s was a strange time. We actually have a cartoon called The Pocket Protectors, which is a direct piss take on the 80s.
Yeah.
The toy companies need to keep producing cartoons so they could sell toys. So we came up with this idea that they ran out of ideas and were scrambling and decided to take your everyday stationery and turn them into little robots, and so it's kind of lame. So the whole show was about how lame these things were and how much they didn't help anybody.
Yeah. Good. You're getting to vent your 8-year-old kid frustration.
Absolutely.
I'll get back at you now. Just to close this bit off, it sounds like, because the sort of things we've talked about, I said, did you show it to kids beforehand? You know, I was going to ask whether you looked into, I'm assuming you didn't look into things like this, how the psychology of different characters works academically or anything.
So
right round it all up, it seems like you guys have just gone with your gut feeling.
Well, this is a passion of ours since we were, all three of us, isn't it? The other guy, Tim, is back at the studio. But it started out as the three of us, and we all share the same story. Like, from 5 years old, we knew we wanted to make cartoons.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about that, because I wanted to, move along, and it was actually going to be later on in my mind's eye, but that's fine. the history of, I think it's really interesting, because it's sort of a story of just kind of sticking at it, really, because 98, it's a long time ago.
98 was our first year of animation school.
Didn't grow up together, didn't know each other, all from Auckland?
Different ends of Auckland,
Tim was born in England, so his family immigrated here in the 80s, like 8. He was young, we're all from very different parts of Auckland. I guess fairly similar social backgrounds.
Yeah.
Families kind of very middle, working class. And
nerds.
Yeah, we just just really absorbed a lot of 80s, as we've mentioned before. Star Wars, huge.
Yeah.
Jim Henson and the Muppets, Spielberg movies,
Jones and all the...
One thing that's really changed is we all had that collective experience. Like if you came to school, it was like if you could get it off Coronation Street or whatever, you'd all watched that same show. I think that's really different now. That collective cultural experience, things really changed.
Appointment television's kind of gone, whereas entertainment's very individual.
Yeah.
But
sorry, back to your history. So we
met on our course in which we started in 98, and then kind of in 99 was when this sort of trio started clicking, and we.
Yeah.
I don't know, I guess just our sense of humour's kind of all meshed well. And
yeah, it kind of it was, because it wasn't only just, the geeky stuff we related to. It was what a big part of what makes us click as friends is our love of comedy.
Yeah.
And whether it's, the Goons or Python or, American stuff like Police Squad, Zucker Brothers stuff.
Nice beaver.
Yeah, real silly, silly shit. And and that's always been our at the heart of what we do is, and again, in terms of animation, Chuck Jones, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck.
Yeah.
So we kind of clicked over that sort of stuff too.
We just started writing our own little skits and coming up with
comics
and ideas for comics and shows, and
just sounds like a lot of fun to me.
Yeah, so we weren't actually doing our schoolwork.
It was a big distraction.
Making our own stuff, and we stuck at that for 3 years.
But hang on, isn't that totally related to schoolwork? I'm really interested in at animation school. Obviously, you have to learn the technical side of animating, but surely storytelling.
It's a huge gap.
Because I teach stuff like the three act structure and the hero's journey and all that sort of stuff.
It is. To be honest, it probably is a little more in there now than when we were there, but we were just very
so
much
you were just
learning
being taught how to use animate. Machinery to animate things.
And I think that's what we all... When
what
we,
was the traditional type of animating? The Disney Warner Brothers stuff, where you've got you're doing keyframes and then in-betweening and you're flipping the pages to
Is that school still around?
It's now called Animation College. Yeah, and
they cover a lot more stuff now than
computer stuff in 98. I find that surprising.
No, it was all traditional.
All traditional.
Do you think that's a good... You really glad that's the way you started? Or?
Absolutely. Yeah, because that's what we wanted to do. We are still very passionate about 2D animation.
I did a year in 3D animation afterwards.
Yeah.
And it kind of just solidified my love of 2D animation. So
2D, we need to talk about exactly what the two of you do in this organization soon. But so 2D... You are still these days starting off on paper and then
essentially Alex is kind of our lead character designer.
So you drew all those characters?
Thanks, man. Yeah, no, it's a fun job. I love it. It's tough because there's a lot. The cast and the show just grows and grows.
It's enormous.
So there's a lot of work to do, and I'm trying to make it as fun looking as possible.
Does it bother you with the way things like Family Guy look?
Yep.
You think it's just incredibly lazy, but it's iconic for something like South Park. I think South Park could only look that way.
Yeah. South Park is different.
Hit me with all this nerd stuff. I want to know.
That's kind of the charm of the show. But I don't know. There's a weird... A big part of the problem is the adult audience and what they're willing to accept. And there's a strange,
Something weird in the 80s happened where cartoons became for kids.
What did they used to be for families?
When animation was first sort of 100 years ago the early Mickey Mouse shorts, they were before movies that only adults were going to.
Yeah,
even the Looney Tunes stuff that we grew up on, the Bugs Bunny show after school, weren't made for us. They were made in the 40s and 50s for adults.
They were full of social commentary. They were full of stuff for adults. They were goofy and silly, but...
That's why Bugs Bunny is a cross-dresser and they shoot guns and smoke cigars. It's not made for eight-year-olds.
And, well, Damn it, I'm glad it was part of my... I think it's
yeah,
part
well,
of
absolutely.
Kids' time now.
It's a huge you know, part of yeah. why we do what
yes.
we do.
So. Amazing racism, like just...
yeah, there were like, those yeah. elements too, for sure. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you know, I've... And something happened where they just...
So, we're gonna, yeah, sorry, no.
They just decided that stuff for adults needed to look kind of ugly.
Yeah.
You know, kind of strip, kind of
so it's
style.
Not just a budget thing or whatever. They decided that's
no,
how
it should
look.
No,
after
think,
Family Guy, I think there is now a conscious decision to,
yeah,
design wise to make it Rick and Morty, BoJack Horseman. Like, there's what, some really
that you just basically spoke Russian to me.
Okay,
so
Rick and Morty's a huge
yeah.
Adult Swim cartoon.
Oh, Rick and Morty, yeah.
Animated, yeah, it's super so. Funny, but. Yeah.
It looks like shit.
You strip it back and it's
I
ugly,
hate the design.
Ugly drawings.
Yeah.
And BoJack Horseman, a big
I'm
show
I'm friends
on Netflix.
With the creator on Facebook, so...
Yeah.
I'm sorry, dude.
Name dropping.
But the other one I've never heard of, the second show you talked about. Yeah. So what's going on with that one visually?
BoJack Horseman is a big show. It's a smart show, like really well written. It's a Netflix animated show. But it's vomit for my eyeballs. I can't... Yeah, I mean...
Are you saying Family Guy started off this sort of worrying trend that it's okay just to knock something together? Is that where we are?
No, it's a complex thing. I don't think...
Yeah, it's hard
I
to
think,
kind of...
I'm not saying it's not somebody's up. Style, but
I
don't necessarily think it's designed by good artists.
Because no one... Hopefully people, if they haven't seen your show, are kind of at least Googling images and stuff. What? No, seriously, that's what I do. No, but my point is, so yours, I don't... You know, my knowledge of animation styles, whatever, is not great. It's not probably even existent, really. But I'd sort of describe it as more sort of intricate kind of comic book art style than something like Family Guy or whatever.
Well, I think...
No,
and,
go on.
And our frustration, I guess... Not to knock all those shows, because I've watched all of them, and you know, Family Guy's made me laugh. I don't watch it so much now, but you know, there was a time where
I've laughed.
You know,
I've laughed
it got a little bit mean spirited at one point. And I was just like, I'm not sure this is what I need right now. But so it's not really anything against them. It's just our frustration when we spend so much time. Trying
no, it's
to make
not
things,
it's not coming across like
coming make stuff look unique, and then you show it to people, and they're like, right, oh, that looks really young.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the feedback we often get. It's like,
that looks
we're
really
drawing
young,
it for ourselves, and we're
really
in our mid-30s. So,
so there is something in this adult... Maybe we just think that.
Well, one of the things we've battled consistently since day one of starting this business, and even probably before, I mean, growing up, you know, I was the kid at high school. I didn't have chicks and naked girls all over my folders. I had Calvin and Hobbes and, you know, Disney stuff. Like, I was weird, but... You know, in my own little world,
no hand drawn Iron Maiden logo.
Not so much. It was all it was animation was my Iron Maiden.
The lightning
you know?
Thing the wrong way around. Actually, no, you would have got it the right way around.
But but Disney was my Iron Maiden. You know, like they I was obsessed with Disney. But
I think that's the I think that's the one liner for the show. Copy Disney was my Iron Maiden. Was that?
Yeah,
okay.
That's a T-shirt.
Thanks, continue.
So one of the things we've battled consistently is animations for children.
Yeah,
and you'll hear constantly. I mean, Ryan probably gets it a lot because he's dealing with his kids' friends' parents, and they'll. Kind of say what animation is like this what do you call it, like a
frivolous or
I'm losing my words now. It's a shame, you know. It's
a shame. They think it's a shame what you're doing.
Going to watch
something
animated, it's a little bit embarrassing. Like, oh, I've got to take my kids, you know. And they'll say shit like, Pixar. They got multiple levels. They got the kids thing, and stuff for adults.
I told every friggin' adult I knew to go and see Inside Out after I went to the cinema.
Was
stunning,
but,
right?
But it always comes with a disclaimer. I took my kids. I wouldn't go see that by myself.
You always get the whole...
Well, I once went to one of the Shreks on my own, and I didn't realize it was school holiday, and I felt a little potentially like I looked like a perv.
Yeah, Shrek's different because it's
a big bag
garbage,
of sweets up the back there.
The whole...
Hey, I was on holiday. It was raining. I went and saw Shrek 2 at the cinema.
Yikes.
On my own with kids weren't mine
the kids loved it, but I actually really loved it.
Yeah.
Like that sort of like backhanded, like I remember someone saw someone I don't really, I kind of barely know, was like, oh, I watched your show, I watched the Barefoot Bandits. Yeah. It was actually really funny. Yeah. It's like, could you just drop that word actually out of there? Yeah, because we intended it to be funny.
Because there's a weird thing, like we've noticed.
It's all good, it wasn't shit. So that's okay, good, excellent. Yeah, there's
a weird thing in the West again that, you know, there's, it seems to be mostly a Western kind of cultural thing around animation.
Yeah, because hello, it's for Japan. Kids. Yeah.
And then you go to Asia and it's just like the way we tell stories, and this one in particular is animated. Like, you know, and it doesn't scare people. Whereas, you know, that's why we have, you know, the only thing we have coming out of the West is mostly American stuff.
Yeah.
And it's all CG. It all looks like it's made by the same studio. And it's all very much the same type of story. Like,
well, what about with you guys with that? I know it's not the same
always,
studios made me think about. Do you get all your kind of, I guess, colouring in? The technical term, but do you get all your colouring done offshore or whatever, like a lot of companies do?
No, it's all in-house. Yeah,
well, that so was is a that big... hugely time-consuming?
Nope.
No. Again, I guess we go back
because your backgrounds are static, right?
And yes. You've got they're all characters. So backgrounds are all painted in Photoshop by our background artist for this show. I used to do all the background stuff as well as the character design, but it's just too much of a big undertaking on this project. So we have a background artist that paints it all in Photoshop, and then we've got I design the characters firstly on paper, and then for the most part, and then in our animation program called Flash, where I'll make the character.
I have heard of Flash.
Yeah, so we build them up like a puppet.
But thank you.
Yeah. That was for the audience.
Yeah.
And then the guys animate in Flash, and we composite it in After Effects.
We haven't had. Had you talk about what you do yet?
I do a few things, kind of direct, and I write. I'm one of the lead writers on the show. I voice a few characters
in
the show.
You don't do any voice?
No.
Who are you?
Ryan.
Who do I voice? I voice about 15 characters in the show.
Yeah.
Okay, in the first episode, were you the old Scottish mother?
Yes, I was
the
old lady. So that's based on my nana.
Right, okay.
So yeah, that was my dad's mum. Was an old Scottish. She was a bit mean to my dad, but nice to everyone else.
That's kind of when you started doing voices, eh?
Yeah, my first impression was of my nana.
Were you the...
Yeah.
Get rest in peace.
yep.
I love this character. I love a character that laughs at their own jokes. The Russian.
Yes.
You were the Russian.
Yes, that like a nine. Yes.
Bit of a homage to Precious Pup with that laugh.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's true.
Where we're going with it. Yeah, that's right. So as friends and as people who will, you know, crack each other up and like looking and listening to funny stuff, I'm guessing even though you're on the animation side, that you sit in on the... Do you all sit together? Do you have a writer's table?
Absolutely. More or less. That's a massive... Like,
so if everyone's just in stitches, it's like it goes through, basically.
Yeah, it's all... Yeah. There was never any ego with our stuff. It was always best gag wins. What's the... Yeah. You know, it's all in service of the story. Yeah. You know, and you hear a lot of people kind of talk about that. And it's very much the case with us. And we just kind of brainstorm together.
So 10 episodes, how many hours of brainstorming in 10 hours?
Do you know what? To be honest, the ideas come really quick.
Yeah.
Like, we'll sit in a room and spend a couple of hours and we can probably nut out the 10 basic outlines for 10 episodes.
Yeah.
I don't know. When you've been working towards this for 13 years, you have this wish list of things you want to do, so it's just spilled out
of
you.
Is there a Scooby-Doo-esque kind of formula to make them quicker to...
We generally choose a genre. Yeah. Like, our big thing was, when we got the first series, it was like, okay, we've got 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Let's give it our all. And we decided we'd treat each episode like a movie.
Yeah.
So we'd pick a genre. It's like, okay,
I'm going to bear that in mind when I watch
this. Yeah, so this is the Alien X-Files episode, and this is the disaster movie episode, and this is the zombie episode.
Can you remember what the one I watched was?
Yeah, it's the first episode, right, with the Russian. I guess that was kind of our X-Files, sort of, like...
In the pilot, the one of the main leads, Riley, was not in the show. So when we got the show, we wanted to add to the group of kids and have a female lead. And that first episode is essentially the introduction of Riley to the boys,
yeah,
and their friendship starting over.
Yeah, we want to introduce a girl who was just a bigger nerd than them, and she had an absolute obsession with aliens, and she brought that to the table.
And it definitely felt like I can't think of if it's a particular film, whatever, but it's smacked of an 80s storyline where the girl turns up and they both sort of try and be impressive.
There's a little bit of that.
Then she gets accepted in, and he's all kind of huffy and puffy. And
as the show goes on, we definitely wanted to create a female lead that was not like a lot of
we haven't talked about who yet. Riley, tell us about her.
Riley's kind of this. She's the daughter of a scientist who everything that comes out of her mouth is kind of factual or is based around science. But then she has this kind of side to her where she gets very excited about the paranormal and things that are kind of anti-science. She's got this conflicting sort of like...
Well, she's got a sort of childhood imagination and a very pragmatic background because of her father grounding.
She's kind
of
like,
you know,
ghosts couldn't exist because of X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
But then see a ghost and be extremely excited. Yeah, yeah.
But because it is a cartoon, ghosts do exist. And aliens do exist. Yeah. And whatever.
So yeah, we just wanted to introduce someone that brought in the smarts to the team because the boys are kind of...
Yeah.
And then just be one of the group for the rest of the series. There was no, you know... They're all a lead, and they all
Give you an idea of Fridge's level of perhaps nous compared to her. I think the line I first laughed out loud at was when he said that he was called Fridge because he could fit a lot of food into himself, and then there's a great comic pause and because he's magnetic.
Yeah, because magnets.
I got the lines
him,
wrong, but it was much funnier what I heard.
Absolutely. And
he's kind of Ralph Wiggum-esque in that.
He always
moment.
Says a little bit. Yeah, totally. And with Fridge, he always says a little bit more than he should.
Yeah,
like he always goes that one, and that's
you mean like awkward
that sort of stuff. Yeah. Like it's a testament to Josh Thompson who voices Fridge. You know, he's a very funny guy, and we let him ramble in the voice booth. Like he just adds so much to the character that isn't on paper.
Yeah, him and Rhys Darby very much are in their element.
Give us a lot of material.
What a coup! I wouldn't have known part of the answer to this if I had. Is your arm going to be okay, man? You're going to have a sore arm for the rest of the day. That weird whining has gone. That was great. I thought, oh my god, it's going to ruin the episode. It's about a minute. That's right. Fine. Anyway, what I was going to ask. Oh yeah, Rhys Darby. I kind of seem to know the answer to this now, and that he. I'm guessing he didn't charge you market Rhys Darby rate because you guys are mates. No. What an awesome addition.
Well, everyone was pretty good with that. Yeah. Like we don't make the show for a lot of money. Like it's
no,
we had to kind of find a way to make animation affordable in New Zealand because
you were friends with Rhys already.
We knew him. We used him in a couple of things. And just chatted like, and then when we got to make the Christmas special and introduce his character, it kind of had to be him. Like we'd written a role for him, so we offered it to him and he was like, of course, like, you know, especially since it was the first of its kind, an animated Christmas special made in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Like, it had never been done before. So everyone was keen to get involved.
Is that up on demand as well?
I don't know if it still is.
Is it on your website?
It might be on demand, actually.
Okay, yeah, it might be on the TVNZ on demand.
Yeah.
But, sorry, it was. So, yeah, it's definitely looks like it was made before we got better. But
so that was just made by the three of us.
But it was quite a good, not a ploy, because I shouldn't say it was a ploy, but... Everyone was keen to be involved because of the nature of the project. Like, it was something that, you know, it was being made in New Zealand. It was a uniquely Kiwi setting and interesting Kiwi characters. So,
I got to thinking today when I watched it, like, whether, I don't know what influences what, like, whether the style of comedy you guys deliver is New Zealand, because that's New Zealand.
Yeah.
But because it felt kind of flight of... I don't mean you guys are biting from things, but what I'm getting at is it's really interesting to me how through all these different things like Flight of the Conchords and you guys and other things I'm putting myself on the spot and can't think of, there's this kind of New Zealand comedy emerging. It's really cool.
We've tried to put our finger on it. You know? I think there's
That's what I mean with that kind of flat delivery and stuff. Yeah. Were you influenced by that without realizing it? Who knows? But I think we were trying to make the anti-cartoon, to be honest.
Yeah. You know what I mean? We were trying to make a cartoon that wasn't high energy all the time, like, you know, because
to infinity,
everything is a sound effect, and everything is like, oh no, we just want And I guess that's maybe the same for Flight of the Conchords and same for Taika.
Yeah.
Is they probably strive to do the same as us and do something that was a little more casual and low-key. You know, it's kind of, you just want to do the opposite of that stuff that's out there.
Yeah.
Not that I don't love some of that stuff, but I don't know. There is kind of, I think Kiwi comedians have found that kind of deadpan, low-key sort of groove.
Which,
I love it. It really makes me laugh, like hearing a deadpan delivery come out of
when someone's character. Got amazing comic timing. Totally, it's awesome.
Josh voicing Fridge is just and Laura and Tammy as well. They all just give these amazing performances. But so it kind of makes us listen for that type of voice. Like in the second series, we have we have Corey Gonzalez.
Yep.
And he's got a very deadpan kind of delivery, and he voices a ghost pirate, and it's amazing.
Yeah,
because we just let him be him.
So you've got essentially known Kiwis and cameos.
To blow.
How did you? I was going to ask that before. You just reminded me. How did you get Tim? Because he's an enigma now.
Yeah, to be honest, we just put it out to his agent.
Yeah.
We had a wish list and, you know, we were...
I think we got 99% of who we wanted.
And again, Tim featured in the Christmas special many years ago, which is, again, the pilot for Barefoot Bandits. And so he featured, all the voice cast came back for the series that, that were in the pilot. Tim was someone we wanted Tane's parents to be a big part of the show, and his mum and dad. We kind of were trying to think of someone who has an iconic voice and a presence, and but would be fun to kind of maybe
throw your odd silly line,
hear him do something a bit sillier and a little bit out of the ordinary. And Tim, he jumped on it.
Different to the father he's most famous for playing.
Yeah,
right?
absolutely.
But he's awesome. Like we love working with Tim. It's been pretty cool to see his career kind of take off again massively in the last couple of years as well. Yeah,
so the sound thing really interests me. I think it's often overlooked when people kind of talk about TV and film and so on.
Absolutely.
But it's massive, you know. I kind of, again, teaching wise, I teach audio stuff. Just a very general question. What's the process? Who finds all your sound? And have you got a sound engineer and
part
of the team permanently?
It's kind of a mix. Obviously we record the voices first in-house. We have our own little...
Setup like this? Is that all you need?
I built this little soundproof sort of portable booth that we've used for, quite a few years. We use a lot of production music in the show.
Yeah.
So we lay all that ourselves and time it and, you know, time out a scene to the music. And we do, I don't know, maybe 50% of the sound effects and sound design up front.
And so someone's a musician amongst you, because that's right, there are songs and so on.
Yeah, Tim's a muso.
I wouldn't call myself a musician, but Ryan
has written...
But you dropped some of those raps in it.
I wrote the theme song.
Oh, cool.
And had the beat in your head, we put it out to...
I wouldn't say I'm a musician, but I'm a songwriter.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hello.
Yeah. Well, I knew what I wanted. Yeah. Like, I knew I wanted to hark back again to the 80s.
Did you play anything growing up?
No.
No, okay, well, there you go.
No. But, yeah, so I wrote the song, I had the beat, and then we approached Tommy Ill and said, "We love your stuff. This is what we want. Is this something you're interested to be, want to be involved in?" He was like, "Hell yeah." We're like, "We want an 80s cartoon theme song." A rappy sort of, and he beyond delivered.
Nailed it.
It's just great in New Zealand, that attitude. You know what you talked about with everyone coming to it? In Wellington, we used to call them bro jobs. Nothing like a good Kiwi bro job.
We'll
do that. That's a great idea. It's on my bucket list to be involved with a cartoon thing.
That's
the whole
show, the essence of it.
And our cast, again, back to the cast, like, it's... We were just looking at it the other day. We made a chart of everyone who's in series 2. it's just, it's crazy. I can't believe we have
your cameos. Yeah,
yeah. Like we got the top twins, and we got
oh wow.
Who else have we got in
Richard
there?
O'Brien.
Richard O'Brien.
Oh, awesome! Now you've got the fanboy in me.
Yeah.
Rocky Horror was a big part of my growing up.
Yeah. And he was hard to track down because he doesn't have an agent.
He was on Breakfast a few weeks ago in a dress and a wig. Bless him.
Brilliant.
Awesome.
And no one could bat an eye or whatever. And he did the whole interview. And
he's definitely.
He came in and he was
unique
just
character.
Awesome. He voices a vampire.
Well, there's
the
a songwriter.
Series.
My God, I mean that's one of the most iconic musicals ever.
And
right?
he was so pro and so nice. And
well, he's
stuck
very much the thespian, isn't he? Very much business.
Absolutely.
Business,
he had an idea about the character. Yeah. So he's a he's a sort of a vampire that comes to the island. So he had brought his own sort of idea. He'd thought about it. He was almost, I guess, maybe the only actor that's come prepared and actually read the script.
Yeah, because
everyone's like, I haven't read the script.
So, but quite often we like to see it develop on the day. It's like, you know, let's just give it a go and see what comes out. But he came in with amazing stuff.
You guys just remind me what I want. I love learning about stuff on the scenes. So I wanted to ask about that because you made me think about the idea of ad-libbing.
Yeah.
Do you script watching it? What, do you read? You don't get what I'm asking. Yeah. Do you read watching it? Because if you could, then you can't ad lib because mouths aren't moving right.
No,
so how does that work?
It's all done first before we animate anything.
So you sit down, you go, this is the character, you show a picture of them.
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess now you've got a few episodes up, you can actually, I guess early on, you would have just, we wouldn't really have had anything moving to show them, would you?
Well,
pre production started before voice, you know, before dialogue recording.
Yeah.
Started. So we had drawings and ideas, and for the most part, we want people, we're hiring voice actors to be themselves.
Yeah.
You know, with Richard, it was different because he very much kind of played a kind of a traditional vampire.
It's kind of a heightened version of himself.
Yeah, he had a little bit of an accent on it as well, which we were happy, you know, it's like, dude, just do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But everyone else from, you know, Tammy, Reese, Laura, you know, Lee Hart's in it, and he's just Lee. And
but I like Reese in this because it's not that 140% Reese. It's a strip. It's a stripped back version of his shtick.
And we that kind of we just again let him do his own thing. Yeah. And slowly but surely we kind of realize like, it's cool. It's not Murray. It's not something else he's done.
I really liked it. And in fact, I had to. I was like, that's Rhys Darby. Is it Rhys Darby? Is it Rhys Darby?
Yeah,
And then at the end, I was like, it is Rhys Darby.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's very much, you know, a lot of the, you know, he does ad lib a lot, but a lot of it is what Ryan has written on the page. Because as he's writing, he's hearing Reese's delivery.
That's been the joy of having the cast sorted before I write.
Now
it's
It's
probably pretty creepy for them because I have their voices in my head and I kind of know how they're going to deliver something. So when they come in and it comes out like that, I'm like sitting there like,
and you're doing your Reese impression to Reese. Like,
I'm like, right now, this is how it should be.
And he just looks at me like, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So this is an odd segue. The 80s have been said 643 times during this podcast. What did you guys think of Stranger Things?
Loved it.
Yeah. Amazing, right?
Yeah, so cool. Yeah. It just...
Cool.
I think...
so cinematic. And
just everything. Yeah. You know,
The sound, the freaking synthesizer soundtrack.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
It kind of annoyed us that we didn't do that for Barefoot Bandits now. Yeah. Like, God damn.
Can you do a Stranger Things? Hang on, that's because that's...
We have a couple of episodes.
It's very meta.
Yeah, we have a couple of episodes in the second series that use a bit of synthy music. We've let it seep in there.
It definitely felt like something scooped out of our brains. We kind of like, you know, it really tapped into everything we kind of loved. And
it's the sort of thing I would have missed so much in terms of references and stuff. I spotted some of them. Like, there's a lot hidden in there, right?
And nostalgia gets a bit of a bad rap. I remember there was a bit of a. After a few months of the hype dying down, there were people coming out going, people only like that because it was, you know, nostalgia filled. It's like, so what? Like, that's not a valid emotion.
Yeah.
That's fine. It plays to...
Too much noise. There's too many opinions these days.
There isn't there. It's thanks, internet.
Turn the volume down on the internet for a while.
Yeah.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. So, references and so on. There's Easter eggs in your episodes. I spotted Jim Wigmore's wiggery.
Yeah, we... Definitely.
How much is there hidden in this show, folks? That was during, by the way, folks, to give you more of a feel of this, that was during the tearful ode to the mince and cheese pie.
It was, yes.
I'm reminding you guys of something that's so far back.
That was all an ad-lib from Josh as well. Yeah. We said, there's a poster of a mince and cheese pie and you're saying a sad goodbye to it. Yeah. Go.
I was like, but then I got too analytical and I was like, are they saying Jin Wigmore is wiggery? She doesn't strike me as a wigger. Oh, no, it's just called a wiggery and the joke is it's Jin Wigmore. So anyway, is there other stuff?
Yeah, like there's heaps, man. Like, I mean, it's funny when you kind of...
Do you ever put gags in and not tell them and see if
we generally talk about it. Yeah, it's just a fun thing and it seems to be something very universal. Not a lot of filmmaking, but especially animation. Like, it goes way back to Disney... the films have shit stuck in
gags,
A big one was a lot of Bugs Bunny, old Bugs Bunny cartoons have stuff in the background, like the crew members in posters on the wall, you know, like real in jokey stuff.
Our team of animators, they add stuff in, like more physical comedy, like, you know, you might be watching the main character, but then if you just notice the background character, they're doing something, you know, picking their nose or doing something. There's always little bits like that.
So you guys, now with that, getting to the business end of things, you are responsible for how many staff you got? And are they full time?
Fluctuates between 10 and 15, depending on what stage of the production we're at.
Yeah.
So it was just the three of us for many, many years, for 13 years.
Yeah.
And
what
Alex,
did you do during that 13 years to make money? Things like ads or what?
Ads didn't. We didn't.
We tried. We approached.
Kind of glad
agencies.
It didn't work because I think we could have got stuck in that rut of having
the kind of under the commercial portfolio.
Very much like every other animation studio in Auckland, especially, is very much an ad agency.
Yeah.
And we, you know, like I said, we did try. We approached agencies and showed them our work and said, you know, we can, if you need us for a project. It never led to anything. We made a couple ads. You had
food and shelter for 13 years. How were you?
It was just, you know what? I look back and I wonder.
We lived in the park.
Yeah.
It's actually because it's been such a blur and such a snowball effect since.
Because it's 20 years. It's 20 years.
For the first few years, it was bare bones stuff. We were working out of Tim, the other guy, his parents' basement.
That other guy.
So for the other guy, he's working hard. Yeah. You should see the
hand gestures they're making, Tim. Yeah, terrible. Yeah. Get us on a team.
His parents offered us space in his basement, so we moved in there, moved the company in there with one computer in the corner.
Yeah.
And just tried to figure out what the hell we were going to do and how we were going to make it work. And we started making little web cartoons and
pitching cartoons.
And everyone we approached were like, on the internet, they didn't get it, and that was 2002, 2003.
2 gig hard drive, K of what was the technology like? It must be
not
good. It must, the advancements in the last few years must really, for you guys in particular, as an industry,
this size,
processing and all that stuff, rendering. Yeah. I would imagine you're doing all of that.
Tim's currently doing a lot of rendering, trying to get the second
and
season
we have,
out.
It used to be leave the machine overnight, you know.
We're still like that, bro. But have you got big, huge boxes, custom made?
Definitely a lot more powerful than we used to have.
We've come a long way since the basement days in terms of that, but still we are a very small production in the scheme of things, and compared to other New Zealand productions, compared to other animated productions coming out of the States, we are tiny and the budget is small and everything is kind of... I don't want to say like smell of an oily rag, but it's like it's very.
You haven't said Number 8 Wire as well, which is great.
Yeah, but it's
we didn't use any of that.
No. It's still really hard work, and that's the nature of the art form.
Like our cast alone is worth the whole budget of the series.
Yeah.
So you know.
Yeah.
But back to the so it was the three of us. Alex was ended up becoming our lead character designer because his style sort of. I don't know, it just seemed like it was what the Muck Putty style should be.
Yeah.
And then I kind of, because my love was kind of writing as well, I kind of fell into that role.
And then
Tim was kind of teaching us how to use Flash, because we'd never used that program.
Yeah.
And he knows the technical side of everything, and he's a musician as well.
And a good animator, and then you and him were animating.
And then
I
loved
I was
doing
designing.
Voices, and so we all each had different skills that... we brought to the table for the three. And it just, I think that helped it work. We were able to do everything ourselves.
Yeah.
Keep it small and just keep going for years.
Yeah. We approached other productions. We did, like I said previously, we made a bunch of stuff over the years for What Now and other kids' shows.
Yeah, cool. So you had a pre-existing relationship with production companies who deal with TVNZ.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it was hard for us to...
It took until 2006 to get something
on TV. Did you guys directly go to TVNZ? Did you pitch it?
Barefoot Bandits?
Yeah.
Do you remember the day? Were you freaking nervous?
Yeah, it was.
Who was in the room?
It was the three of us.
Yeah.
Well, I assume that. Who was from TVNZ?
The commissioner.
Kids commissioner.
Yeah. Thingy was going. Yeah. That's a reference to the beginning of the episode, guys.
So, it was incredibly nerve-wracking because when we first met and we pitched the Christmas special, we did it verbally.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was a shambles. Like...
We got this thing, and then there's a
and then we would correct each other. We'd be like, "Oh no, actually, it's this." And we walked out of it. And she was like, "You know, she was listening, but at the end, she's like, I don't think that's the sort of thing we really want." We walked out.
That's just punishing.
We were like, "Holy shit! We had it so sorted before. We know the idea so well."
And it's weird that you collectively did that. You think one of you would have held the other one up, sort of thing, you know?
I don't know.
And hey, it's a learning curve, right?
But as her face kind of dropped and we were like, oh, shit! So, you know, scramble, like, you know, fumbling the ball, like hot potatoes.
So the next year we pitched a preschool show and we also slipped in a 2-page breakdown of this Christmas special.
Yeah.
Put it in writing.
Wow.
Pitched her the...
same woman.
Pitched to the priest because they're really open. You know, we're starting to build a relationship. They're willing to hear ideas.
Yeah.
So then we pitched this preschool show and slipped into the same manila folder a 2-page breakdown of Missing Christmas. And the next day we got a phone call from her saying, we like the Christmas idea.
Did she remember that she'd been terribly delivered at the year before? So
probably not. I'm not sure. That's
awesome. So the TVNZ, I would never have guessed this because of the state of New Zealand television. Are they pitched stuff a lot, are they? Is her full-time kind of job taking?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I don't
outside really know. Of our little dealings with them, it's hard to know.
Purse and stuff, it's the creative dilemma, isn't it? Especially in New Zealand. You guys are all still here, which is amazing. I don't know what you want to tell me and you don't, but when you talked about the budget and stuff, is it New Zealand On Air I'm just interested, to TVNZ, how does it work? Do TVNZ pay to buy the series?
So basically you go to TVNZ or TV3, pitch the idea. So this is for children's. It works for the same for both. The license fees are different. So you pitch the idea. If they like it...
The what fees?
The license fees. Essentially if TVNZ or TV2, TV1, if they like it, they will commit to paying a license fee for the show, which is... For children's, it's 6% of the entire budget.
Licensed to broadcast, of course.
That's their kind of what they put in.
Yeah.
And obviously, whatever promotion they do on their channel. And then goes to New Zealand On Air, and New Zealand On Air see that TV2 will play it, and they've put a license fee in. And then it's up to you guys to apply to
New Zealand On Air, not TV.
Sort of. But once
I hear what you're saying, it's like, well, hello, if it's going to be broadcast, it should be supported. Makes sense.
You need
a broadcaster on board, and then you put together like an extensive pitch involving, like, you know, breaking down the, you know, our pitch bible is like, you know, massively thick with character breakdowns and story ideas, and then obviously the budget as well.
So your income for you and all your staff is TVNZ's commissioning and New Zealand On Air.
That's great
to hear, when we often hear so much about how our public broadcaster isn't supporting stuff. It's great. It's on the air.
The last couple of years.
We can't be dismissive all the time.
Oh, and New Zealand On Air are great. Yeah.
They genuinely love us.
Honestly, our interactions. Without sounding like I'm blowing smoke. Feedback has always been great. They've been really prompt. There's an interesting thing going on at the moment where TV is... in its current, you know, free-to-air TV in its current state it's on its last legs.
It's an interesting topic. Some people say yes, some people say no. The figures say it's okay, but I think I'm with you.
When you,
where's your, is it being watched on tablets on demand, or is it being watched?
Both. Yeah, yeah, we definitely.
Because you ended up next to the Simpsons, right?
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that was a pretty. That was a pretty sweet moment where we realised we were the lead-in for The Simpsons. It was like
6 o'clock.
If you told me
6:30 on a Sunday, first season started airing last February. Yeah. So,
who's not home 6:30 on a Sunday?
You know? Yeah, well, it was. We found out summer. Not many people. Yeah,
it was
so,
summer,
it made it. So this second series, we've pushed it to winter because I think you got more of a captive.
Well, maybe I can teach you guys something here. I don't know if you're aware of this. I assume you got that from ratings.
No. That's
we have not been indulged with many figures.
Well, how do you say you don't? You, people weren't watching because it was summer. If you don't,
they moved
they
the show.
They shifted the time.
They shifted the time.
Well, I was
going to
say
Saturday
a lot of people don't know this, but New Zealand television is measured by a people meter.
Yeah.
There's only about 400 of those, and that's more than there ever used to be.
Yeah.
And so you might have one people meter determining what I don't know, Māori males in the upper North Island are watching. That's huge areas are determined by very few machines. So what I'm sort of saying is, statistically, it's quite a murky way of
measuring. New Zealand only did an independent kind of research into what kids were watching.
Yeah.
And it came back that 72% or something like that were their main source of entertainment was YouTube.
Yeah,
so it surpassed TV.
Yeah.
So
you got them up on YouTube? We can't. You're
we
not
can't
allowed
put
to
them
do
on
that.
YouTube, but they are
not
on TV.
Allowed to because of the TVNZ.
Yeah, yeah. We
so
have
I find this really interesting.
We so have a lot of behind the scenes sort of extra stuff that we put on YouTube.
We try to be very prolific on social media with our stuff, constantly giving glimpses of what we're doing, you know, so that's a way we get content onto YouTube. But
is it kids or adults watching it, or equal amounts of both? I suppose you don't really
know.
What do your kids think of it?
Yeah, they love it.
They don't even
seem to care that dad made it. It's kind of nice. It's a nice gauge.
Well, they're both voice actors in it too.
Are they?
Yeah, they got little parts. Yeah, so. Those happen to be their favourite episodes. But
Cohen plays a little mutant eggplant that comes to life, and Isla is a mower. Yeah. That the kids find a mower egg that hatches, and Molly the mower, so which seems to be a favourite.
I went and did a talk at their school.
Yeah,
and I did a talk.
Was it like a My Dad Is Bring Them In Day?
Sort of.
Oh, that's so cool.
Sort of. Yeah. They the schools all dabble in animation and a lot of coding and stuff now, which blows my mind that my son is 6 and he's doing the early stages of coding.
Yeah, you know, I think that's great, man.
Yeah,
awesome,
absolutely.
Right?
Those are the jobs.
So
they got me in to kind of talk about that. But, you know, it was a class, it was a big group of about 80 to 100 kids, and I said, who's watched The Barefoot Bandits? And 80% of the hands went up.
Cool.
And I was like, here we go. Here's my audience.
It's hard to gauge ourselves.
I have arrived.
Yeah, yeah. And then
it's hard to gauge on social media and stuff, you know, because kids aren't so tapped into Facebook.
Oh, look, even with this, man, like, just saying every week, can you
pass it?
Can you fucking like it on whatever, you know? And so people do, and that's lovely. Because it's amazing. Like, we used to go and pay to rent a video or whatever, and it's like, I'm just asking you to go to iTunes. And,
yeah, well, that's the thing, you know, social media.
Sorry, listeners, I love you.
Social media is such a great way for small and creative businesses to get their work out there, you know? And it's become harder over the years with algorithms and all that shit, and Facebook strangling views and all that shit that they sort of turned it into a business model, which I guess it always was.
Yeah.
But at this, you know, we've always used the internet as a tool from day one. We had a website with our stuff on it.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, we had no money.
So late 90s.
Yeah.
So I
early
2000s. Early 2000s,
really.
So that was our.
Okay, so there were a number of websites in New Zealand. Yeah.
Yeah, not many. It was very early days, man.
But it opened doors overseas.
One of those
like
flash sites
having
of that era.
Having an online. Having an online presence really was a portal to the world.
Yeah.
Because then in 2005, somehow we managed to save up and we took a trip to the States. And sent emails out to these people who were our idols, you know, at Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon and Disney, and the doors opened everywhere and they welcomed us in, and we sat down and we pitched ideas and they listened, and it's like
for other series or other things.
Stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and we had a few in 2007 we did the same thing, and we had a few studios come back and say we love that idea, and we developed them, and they didn't go anywhere ultimately because that's a big machine. You know,
we did make a pilot for Nickelodeon in 2008.
I think I read was that Nickelodeon UK.
Yeah.
Because this comes back to something you were saying probably 20 or 30 minutes ago, you mentioned a lot of stuff comes out of America and got me thinking, I've not seen a lot of British animation. No, Banana Man when I was growing up.
Yeah, we grew up on a lot. There was a lot. Danger Mouse, stuff like that.
Not now, though.
Nah, not so much.
Oh, I mean, crumbs!
Yeah, they have a big industry of...
great.
They have a big industry of preschool content, which still, you know...
What show was the Camp Skeleton on?
That was Super Ted.
Super Ted, it's all coming back.
Yeah. Sorry. So there was some good stuff coming out of the UK. You know, obviously... Yeah, I don't know why. I guess networks now, it all comes down to what they're buying locally. You know, here they go to the state, these big conventions, buy all the American stuff because...
Yeah, they make a lot of stuff in Canada. There's lots of Canadian cartoons.
Yeah, right. Canada just sounds cooler and cooler the more I hear about Canada.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty magical place.
Yeah.
There's no Trump there. There's
yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah. I think you said before broadcast television is on its last legs.
In its current state, yeah.
Its current state. And it's totally, yeah. So for you guys, what's the plan for the future? How do you, because we you know, you got to keep coming back to deriving an income, right? So you're sort of throwing it up on YouTube and hoping. How many hits do you need on YouTube before a check arrives? 100,000 or something?
Yeah. It's pretty high. More than we get. The comment we get most on our YouTube, and this is not a lie, is why doesn't your stuff have more views?
So if we knew,
I can pass it.
Well, I'm going to start showing it to, like I did with my dear friend Guy, Robert and Sheepy. You ever seen Robert and Sheepy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I started showing that to my students, and I'll start bringing your show into the classroom where I can.
Awesome.
That's what it's about, right? You know, it's just about. But I think these days that is. You guys are here today. It's an example. It's what we've got to do now, right?
That's right.
You know?
I think.
But there's an amazing freedom with that as well.
Yeah.
You know.
I think just the whole on demand type thing is what's going to replace television. You know, I think you know, TV and Z will exist, but I don't think it'll exist how it exists now. I think they'll become their version of Netflix and that sort of thing.
Well, you can sort of see the way they're changing the way the site looks and stuff. They're trying to do that at the moment.
Yeah,
right?
Well, and we're happy to kind of milk it for as long as we, you know, make this show. We love making this show. It's, you know, we're really proud of it.
Too obscure for Netflix? Have you looked into Netflix?
That's where we're trying.
We have a sales agent.
Oh, man, good luck. I think that could be amazing for you.
Yeah, and we have original ideas as well that we want to pitch to these big, Amazon and Netflix and stuff. Once we get a moment to breathe.
I thought you might. I mean, if the animation's terrible, I apologize before I say this, but an American comedian. He's done a 1970 homage to the 70s.
Oh yeah, Bill Burr.
Yeah, what's that show called?
F for Family.
Freaking loved that.
Yeah,
the story and character wise.
Yeah, it's a great show.
The test. Do you remember the testicle scene? That's some of the rawest.
Yeah, I love.
So you like that, even though it's quite simplistic.
There's definitely a style to it.
Yeah,
as much as it is still in that realm.
Well,
it's pretty safe.
It kind of looks. I don't know my animation history, but now I think about it, it kind of almost looks like it's trying to look of that era.
Yes, I think it probably is. The look, the setting of the show is the 70s.
I'll put you through the fucking wall.
I love that line. I love it.
Because he goes on Rogan's podcast. That's where I learned about it. Was I heard him on Rogan. And he really explained it. It's a great show. It's actually, I'm really looking forward to the second series of that.
It's good because it's, kind of, you know, again, it's drawing from his childhood. So it's genuine. And it's got that kind of...
That's it, you guys. It's time for you to give us stuff to listen to. You can nerd out what's good. Just animation-wise, what are you really enjoying at the moment?
We're making our way through the last series of Samurai Jack.
Okay.
You know Samurai Jack?
No, I don't even know that.
Samurai Jack kind of came out in the early to mid 2000s.
Is this animation?
Early 2000s. It was a Cartoon Network show, and the creator, Genndy Tartakovsky, is a guy we'd followed because we were big fans of his stuff at Cartoon Network in the 90s. He made Dexter's Lab.
Oh, I do know
was
that.
Involved
with
Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah.
Some shows that really inspired us while we were at animation.
So Powerpuff Girls inspired. I definitely know, I've never watched it, believe it or not.
It's great. And he came after Dexter's Lab. He did this show Samurai Jack, which is very much
like a sci-fi samurai, like, but real kind of...
I love these descriptions. It's kind of like I do. Yeah, kind of like sci-fi,
There's a lot of nods to stuff that you will recognize, Star Wars, Blade Runner, Conan. Like, yeah. So he's very, very cinematic and theatrical in his delivery, and his visual delivery.
Yeah.
So he's sounded Japanese by his name? Is
no,
his name?
Russian.
Russian.
Russian. Okay, sorry, I thought I heard a Japanese-esque sounding name.
He made this show a few couple of seasons. Cartoon Network didn't really know what to do with it because it's quite adult. Yeah. Like it's this
there's a slow
brooding
pace to it,
kind of pace yeah. and
very little dialogue.
So it kind of just didn't really find an well. It found an audience, but not.
So it sounded to me like it's slow for a cartoon.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's got action in it, but so then it got cancelled
after the fourth season.
And then now with the joy of how things work and the internet and people saying what they want and getting things made. Cool. He's brought it back for 10 final episodes, so and he's allowed to, it's playing in an adult time slot, so he's gone super adult with it.
Yeah, so
and it's amazing.
Listen to you, it sounds you're both like, hey, I've got to see it now. Yeah, I've got to.
Awesome.
Speaking of slow, I was just thinking the other day, I don't know if it's actually too slow. Are you guys Better Call Saul watchers?
Oh, I love it.
I love it, but I'm at the point now where like it's like something really has to happen and soon. This is the longest, what would you call it? Like lead along. I can't think of the expression. It's like, I'm into series two now. It's like, what? Is it going to be one big crazy episode, or is it just going to stay slow all the way through, or is there going to be three really bombastic episodes? Predictions, folks. What do you think?
Series two.
It's got to ramp up soon, right?
How far through series two are you?
Oh yeah, you better not spoil things to me. I think I'm into about episode three.
Yeah.
How many are we up to now? Five.
So series three is playing at the moment.
No. I've watched the first two. I'm watching the third one at the moment. I'm about three episodes in.
To series two or three?
Three.
So am I
up to date? Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah,
okay,
we're both up to date.
Let's ruin it for everyone who's halfway through. So what were you going to, after all of that, why did you ask that? Just to see where I am in the, it's still slow, right?
Yeah, it's slow. I love it.
I love it. I wouldn't still be watching it. You know?
I definitely don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
It's that sort of like, it's definitely plodding along and it's got somewhere. And
I mean, there's a lot of shows like that at the moment because drama on TV is in such a great, overseas, not so much here, but they're taking their time with telling these stories.
It's all changed.
Fargo is another one that's amazing.
Stunning.
The second season is like a work of art. I'm rewatching it. So my girlfriend hasn't watched it, so we're going to go into the third season. That's kind of currently airing. But just the pace of it, just taking their time. And, you know, Mr. Robot was another one.
Yeah.
You
know, like, I've got to get into the second series of that. I really enjoyed it, but something about it is.
Second series lost me. I'm stuck at episode four.
I went about good with True Detective, and everyone was like, wow. I thought that last episode of series one was such a cop out, and I never watched the second one. You guys probably don't remember. It's ages
second
ago.
Second series.
I remember loving the first season, not digging the second season.
Yeah, a few people said that. Yeah. It's crazy now. I've got a list on my fridge of friends of mine, very much of your ilk, who I go, if they tell me to watch it, it's going on the list.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've got a frickin' list. I've got Netflix now. I've got just over 100 gig in a folder called Unwatched on that hard drive there.
Yep.
So there's good and bad to that. I sometimes worry I'm not giving some stuff enough time.
Yeah, well, it's definitely the golden age of TV shows.
Yeah. I just wonder worry about our attention. Well, there's that, and then our attention spans in general these days. Like, I rewatched The Godfather recently, and I thought, man, I reckon a lot of young people now would not be able to watch this.
Yeah.
It's really low key. It's really slow.
Totally. Yeah.
It's long. It's like 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
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 So, you know, there's people who go, oh, it's the end of humanity and da da da. No, we're just evolving. But it's interesting. Yeah. Because media will change. It has to.
On the flip side of that, you've got like shows like Fargo.
Yeah.
Better Call Saul. People are
People
are binge watching those. So there's some people that are still, you know, maybe they are out. Maybe it's not the younger.
The Godfather felt like a different kind of slow.
I know what you mean.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
people are
yeah.
binge watching, and those shows that do have a slow pace, like they'll be watching all 10 episodes in one night or something, you know.
It's amazing what happened. Because I started teaching in 2011. That's not that long ago, 6-7 years ago. And because I sort of teach, kind of get students thinking about media on a kind of critical level. And so one of the basic kind of narratives back then was the state of TV is pretty friggin' shocking, and it's all reality TV, and this is how it happened, and I'll explain all that and all of that. So we've gone from this really, really dire point in TV's history of like these, you know, terrible low-budget cam shows to that. It's amazing in such a short period of time.
Yeah,
so you never really can predict what's going to happen, can you?
Yeah. It's, you know? They just let the right people make shows. It's like, you know, just let the right directors and the right writers.
Yeah, but just even just them spending the money, amazing. I guess it's the subscription model, isn't it? It's like the audience almost votes with, you know. Yeah.
Totally. That's true.
This has been amazing. We've covered so much ground. Eh? It's been, it's like, it's good. It's good. It's really great. Awesome, we've got about 8 minutes to go.
Cool.
7 minutes, 29 Anyway. So what else do we talk about at the end? We've talked a whole lot about your projects and stuff. I just read this big article this morning. Let's bring it down a bit. A really long, well-reasoned article about how the planet's got less than 100 years to go.
Yeah, I've read the same. I think I read a similar one.
And it was incredibly well-written and cited and researched and referred to people whose expertise freaked me the hell out, basically. Yeah. So where are we with that? Sorry to...
This is...
You got kids, you know?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It worries me no end. Like,
But what do we do other than post? You know why I didn't post the article on Facebook? Because I'm like, that's all we're doing. And it's just a cop-out if I post it, even though I think...
I don't know. I'm not sure how we push through people's egos. And you know, people are so... You know, with climate change and with anything like that...
We're still in the window... They reckon scientifically where we can...
Yeah, and but you know what? It takes people admitting that they might be part of the problem to change, you know? Yeah. Like,
So I reckon...
Answer
the question that
I asked. Just... Yeah, people can't, you know? People can't go, oh, maybe my car is part of the problem, or maybe my... You know?
I love eating meat, and I know that that's not, you know? I mean, shit. So it's... Yeah.
Yeah, it's catch-22.
Yeah.
It's...
beef's a big one, man. If people gave up beef...
Farts, eh? Who knew? Farts. It's cow farts, eh? Methane.
Yeah. Yeah, or just... Well,
oh, no, and just farming's just dirty.
I'm all for synthetic. All that
shit, literally, yeah. What's that?
I'm all for letting our scientists make synthetic meat. If it tastes the same,
well, we're in a worrying time where we're not listening to our scientists. Well, the three of us at this table are, but we have a distrust of high-level knowledge and research.
Well, I saw a meme going around that said something like, you know, every disaster movie starts with a scientist being ignored.
Oh god. And that's, I had a guy, Andy, on the show, and we talked about this sort of stuff a bit longer, and I just sort of said, you know, the financial stuff with Trump, da 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 da. To me, it's like whatever. It's like the fucking not acknowledging climate change is my main concern with him.
Scary.
And I've had arguments. I can go through a recession, whatever. Yeah. You know why I'm recession proof? I've got no money. So, you know?
Yeah.
But if the planet goes.
I think I've had arguments, stupid Facebook comment arguments that go nowhere. But, you know, people are like, well, what, you know, what if it's just a hoax and, you know, we've done all this for nothing? I'm like, what do you mean done all of this for
nothing? What's a hoax? The science.
But
it's a science hoax.
Let's say for the next...
I'm not saying the science is valuable, but, you know.
Let's say for the next 30 years, we treat it like the science, you know, the proof is there. Let's all act like things are bad and we need to improve it.
So
and
don't
we need to,
pollute.
We need to not pollute and we need to not do this and that. And say in 30 years that was wrong. The planet's in a better off still.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Like, you know, it's that whole thing like, if I don't know definitely that it's going to be better, then I don't
And you're right,
do
and
it.
Behaviors do change. And so it's like, because, you know, people used to drive around with no seatbelts. Now everyone wears seatbelts. Yeah. And people used to... speaking of the 80s, I remember people would just... I don't know if you guys remember this. Maybe I'm imagining it. But people would just drop litter.
Yeah.
I'm finished with that.
But, we got rid of CFCs and majority of cans
worldwide,
and the ozone layer is repairing itself.
What about getting
rid of palm oil out of Cadbury? You know, the customer spoke and they didn't want the palm unethical palm oil in their fucking chocolate.
Yeah, yeah,
like you know,
the most delicious
sometimes food. and. they listened.
Well, you know? And that's right. And for them, it's just a spreadsheet thing, isn't it? But if money, if the bottom
money talks,
line, if the bottom line affects people, So yeah. Now I'm thinking about all this. Yeah, it's got to be legislation because, well, there's the doing stuff like, you know, I agree with what you said, kind of said earlier on, everyone individually doing stuff, you know, using less plastic, all this sort of stuff helps. But then, it's got to come into legislation or something, whether that'll happen. The '80s. That's right. The '80s. That's what I was going to say. I always find it weird when I read about how this whole climate change discussion is new and stuff to me. Because to me, it's the really same thing when I grew up with a kid what they call it. What do you say? Global warming.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, I'd never thought it went away. I sort of was always weirded out when I read these articles that say there's this new thing we're worrying about.
Yeah.
Because we all remember that was a narrative when we were a kid, right?
It's a pretty arrogant...
Greenpeace were much more kind of visible and stuff then. And,
yeah, totally. Yeah. It's a pretty arrogant mindset to think that we can't have any effect on this, you know? Say, remove everyone from this planet and leave it as is, and then put everyone on it. You don't see that there could be some alteration to that planet?
Well, one of many angles to take on that is it's a bit old now, and it's not a documentary that's going to change your mind, it's not been the greatest doc you've ever seen. It's still really worth a look for the topic. It's called End of the Line, and it's about overfishing. Right. Some of the footage in that's terrifying. We can't pull that much stuff out of the water and expect things to be okay. We can't end on this. What are we going to talk about to close up? What are you going? What the?
We're going to see Alien tonight.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Nice. Did you like the last one that wasn't quite related, was it?
We have lots of discussions about this. We were fans of Prometheus. I know a lot of people didn't like it, but god damn, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
So what's the ideal cinema experience? Are you like IMAX people, or are you like 3D, or you just like to go and see it in a good old traditional? Do you think 3D is a bit of a gimmick?
Depends what the movie is. Yeah. Like, I've seen movies where it was awesome. I'd rather they used it as a gimmick. I think that's the problem. I find they're using it so subtly that within 10 minutes I'm like, I'm just wearing glasses, like in a movie.
Remember
talking to two guys who are currently wearing glasses.
Speaking of I have
perfect eyes.
Oh, damn it! Speaking of how collective cultural experiences, do you guys remember when Gorilla at Large was shown on TV2 in the 80s?
Yes.
And we all had to go to KFC and get our
very much.
Yeah,
so.
How funny is that?
Yeah,
86 or 87. Feels like 86 or 87 or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been. It was definitely the late 80s, but that was a big. Yeah, and we never had KFC as a kid, so all of a sudden we had KFC.
That was definitely one of those ones where mum and dad. It was like once a year because it was.
You don't want to be the, what do you call it, like the abusive family? I can't think of the term. The family that doesn't look after their kids right because you're the only one who didn't get the glasses.
Yeah, yeah.
The kids, the dad up the road made a homemade pair, and you know how when you're a kid, it's like they still work, but it's kind of like
brilliant.
You know what I mean? Like, he's the guy with the homemade.
Yeah,
it's like that. It's like that Eddie Murphy joke about the home burger, if you've ever seen that years ago. So I thought I'd close with, because you guys are animators and stuff, and we're talking about you going to cinema tonight and stuff. VR, do you think you'll be working in that medium?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. We're trying.
But I wonder how stories will be made if we're all having our own experience.
I don't know. Yeah, it's, we definitely, we're always got our finger on the pulse with when it comes to new tech and stuff like that, and especially something like VR where
have you guys tried it somewhere?
Love it. It's great. Tim and Ryan both have the PSVR PlayStation.
Tim's got
all of them. I didn't know they existed.
And Tim's had the Oculus and Vive and we had it at the studio for a wee while.
There's nothing I love more than people coming around to my house and putting them in it who have never been in it.
So you're gaming in full immersion?
Not gaming. Oh, I've got games.
I thought you said PlayStation.
It is PlayStation. PS4.
What do you more watch films for?
You can watch films. Play games.
I sound like a grandparent.
I'm a grandparent
now.
Do you crank the side of it? How does it get started?
My parents come around and I'm like, put them in a shark tank and drop them to the bottom of the ocean. And
oh, so there's so it's experience. Software, yeah, experience
there's experiences.
Software, yeah.
There are games like
Ryan's been playing the Batman one.
Holy shit! The Batman crazy. VR experience makes
how many? How many commercial games we've got commercially? Just like a handful at the moment.
I think there's probably about 20.
Look into this. I've been a gamer for years, but I think that could tip me over.
But the Batman VR,
pretty cool.
Yeah, like it's only 50 minutes long.
Yeah.
From start to finish, but. Yeah.
It's the starting point.
You're Batman. Yeah. Like, you put the suit on.
You're Batman.
Yeah, you're Batman. That's all the sales pitch needs to be. And, you know,
finally.
You get dropped into the Batcave. You drop down into the Batcave, and it's like,
That's very cool.
It really makes
And you
feel
reckon
tiny.
Traditional cinema will continue to exist alongside? Because you've predicted broadcast media is dying, so you're our
barometer. Think so, man.
Film will always exist. How we watch it might change,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I don't know. Hey, let's end there, man. I think that's pretty much... It's been great having you guys in. It's been really fun having two guests. You've set it sowed a seed now for me.
Awesome.
Because it takes a bit of the pressure off me, I feel.
Yeah.
Cool. Good luck. The show's freaking amazing. Thanks, and man. I will definitely be watching more of them. I'll probably binge watch a bunch of them tonight.
Yeah, sweet. We definitely hear that a lot. Like,
It gets really good from episode 5.
Yeah, found our feet personally, sort of towards the end of season 1.
Well, look, so I really like... So that's a good indication.
Awesome.
When you answered the door, I was like, you guys, that's awesome. I really
enjoy
watching.
Thanks, man. Yeah, so you can check out all the episodes on the TVNZ On Demand website. They're all there. Second season.
Say hi to us on Facebook.
Yeah.
Muck Putty.
Yeah, what is it? Because I better go. So it's just Muck Putty.
Muck Putty.
M-U-C-K-P-U-D-Y.
Oh, M-U-K.
Sorry.
M-U-K-P-U-D-Y. Yeah, the Barefoot Bandits have a Facebook page as well, where we put up a lot of behind the scenes and process work. And so we're just finishing off season 2, and it should air in July sometime.
Great.
All things going to plan.
All right, back into the rain you go.
See ya.
Cheers.
Thanks, bro.